welcome to a special holiday edition of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
I want to welcome everyone. Good evening. Welcome to this important town hall meeting about the issues surrounding the hose company Norlite. We are going to have a series of panelists speak this evening about these important issues, and then we'll open it up for questions. Tonight, we're going to hear from Judith Enck, a former regional administrator for the United States Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. We're going to hear from Cohoes Mayor Bill Keeler, a resident of Saratoga Sites in Cohoes, Joseph Ritchie, Dr. David Carpenter from the Albany School of Public Health, and Dr. David Bond from Bennington College. I'm going to start by introducing Judith Enck, who's going to kick us off. Judith is a resident of Rensselaer County. She has spent her entire career working to protect public health and the environment. In Albany, she served as Deputy Secretary for the Environment for two governors, and President Obama appointed her to be Regional Administrator of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. After leaving the Obama administration, Judith founded a new project called Beyond Plastics, which works to eliminate plastic pollution. She is a visiting professor at Bennington College and appears on WAMC's Roundtable Public Affairs show every Friday. Judith, I'd like to invite you to set the stage for us this evening.
Hey, thanks, Corinne. It's great to be with you. Let me just start by saying I really miss no drama Obama. And I miss not having a vigorous EPA. I'm known for my very sophisticated approach to literature. So I want to start by quoting from my favorite book, The Lorax. And I have a quote for all of you who have tuned in tonight. It says, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. And that kind of sums it up and why we're spending this beautiful summer evening talking about a hazardous waste incinerator. For those of you who are on Twitter, I want to urge you to live tweet this whole forum. You're going to hear some great speakers. And feel free to follow me on Twitter, which is ENCKJ. Norlite started operating in 1956. The facility employs about 70 people in Cohoes, a really beautiful community. But Norlite is burning massive amounts of hazardous waste in a city, directly next to a public housing complex. It's very close to both the Hudson River and the Mohawk River. And the Salt Kill Creek runs directly through the site. That creek has not been tested by the state of New York since 2004. Prevailing winds send a great deal of the emissions through not only Cohoes, but also Troy, Rensselaer County, southern Vermont. My concerns about the operation of Norlite extend not just to public health and the environment, but also my concern rests with the workers, the 70 workers who work there. Norlite makes ceramic lightweight aggregate from shale. What is that? So there's a mining operation on the property. They take the shale and then they heat it and it becomes an aggregate material used in construction. Norlite can use gas as its heat source, but it often supplements it by burning large amounts of hazardous waste. Norlite is one of only two kiln facilities like this in the entire country that produces aggregate from burning hazardous waste. So let me start. So as Corinne mentioned, I'm a former federal regulator. So let me start by putting you all to sleep by explaining a key part of the Federal Clean Air Act. It's called Maximum Achievable Control Technology. There are two categories of when MACT applies. First, for hazardous waste incinerators. The second category is cement kilns, like the Lafarge plant in Queens or the kiln in Cohoes. Important point, air pollution limits are weaker for kilns than they are for hazardous waste incinerators. So that translates into less protection for public health and the environment. So in addition to the toxic firefighter foam that we'll talk about, Norlite also burns 475 different chemical descriptions, including halogenated solvents and various mixtures that are contaminated with lead. The way it works is different shipments of hazardous waste arrive mostly from New York State, 38%, 37% from Connecticut, 9% from Pennsylvania. So these tanks arrive at Norlite, and there's a chemist there who's like a mixologist. And he figures out what kind of toxic waste can be mixed with each other without allowing the facility to blow up, which is a good thing. Norlite has a history of environmental violations. They have been fined by New York Department of Environmental Conservation, DEC. They were recently fined by U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Because of past violations, DEC put an on-site staff person monitor who is supposed to monitor compliance with their environmental permits, and he's there 40 hours a week. This past February, I learned that Norlite was burning toxic firefighting foam. It's technically called aqueous film forming foam, which is a mouthful. We in the biz call it AFFF. And what that is if you have a house on fire, the courageous firefighters will put it out with water. But if you have something like a tanker truck or an airplane on fire, water doesn't get the job done. So they use this foam. Unfortunately, the foam contains PFAS chemicals, a group of over 5,000 synthetic chemicals. You're probably familiar with PFOA. That's one of the PFAS chemicals that unfortunately contaminated the public water supply in Hoosick Falls, Petersburg, North Bennington, Vermont. And then PFOS contaminated the public water supply in Newburgh. And it was this toxic firefighter foam. These chemicals are called forever chemicals for a reason. They are highly persistent. They stay in our bodies for many years, and they're known to cause cancer, liver disease, autoimmune deficiencies, and infertility. The U.S. military and the Department of Homeland Security are the largest users of this foam, about 75%. And the military stopped using it because it's so toxic and it was contaminating groundwater. And then they tried to figure out what to do with it. And for the longest time, they did, I think, the responsible thing was keep it at military sites where it was stored until they could figure out a safe disposal option. So just this past February, I remember I'm driving home and I got a call from this great woman, Jane Williams, who is an air toxics expert from California. She's on the National Sierra Club Clean Air Team. And Jane and I are kind of birds of a feather, very shy, retiring. We never rock the boat. And she called me to tell me that there are four hazardous waste incinerators in the country that have signed five-year contracts with the Department of Defense to burn toxic firefighting foam. She told me that the environmental organization Earth Justice was filing a lawsuit because there was no federal environmental review, and this was done without telling anyone. The entire country learned about the situation because Jane Williams submitted a Freedom of Information request to the Department of Defense and learned that this burning was occurring. If not for that, I don't think we would know today that Norlite was burning waste from Department of Defense. I was quite surprised to hear this. In fact, my very professional response to Jane was, "What? You're kidding." Almost everyone who works in the environmental field knows that it is not safe or sensible to burn a FFF, toxic firefighter foam. By definition, it is a fire suppressant. It doesn't burn well. And when you don't have complete breakdown of the chemicals being burned, it means some of these PFAS chemicals or their byproducts will be released into the air. We then learned that Norlite had been burning this material for 2 years with no environmental review, no test burn. And I want to, again, relax you and tell you about another part of the Clean Air Act, which is if you're an incinerator or a kiln, before you burn a new type of waste material at your facility, you are required to do a test burn to see if it causes problems or not. For instance, International Paper wanted to burn tires up on Lake Ticonderoga. The New York DEC rightly interpreted the Clean Air Act and said you have to do a test burn before you add tires. They did the test burn, they failed the test burn, and then DEC said you can't burn the tires. This didn't happen in Cohoes. There was no test burn. And I think one reason is because burning this material is so unusual, the federal EPA has not yet figured out methods on how you do a test burn for toxic firefighter foam. Just last week, New York Department of Environmental Conservation issued a statement saying that they're going to beef up their oversight of Norlite, which is good. But unfortunately, the statement also said that DEC is going to be working closely with EPA in figuring out how to do test burns. They said they're not going to do test burns in Cohoes, which means they'll probably try to do it in Ohio or Arkansas. And while I appreciate it not happening in Cohoes, I don't know why New York DEC would be trying to facilitate test burns in other states. And from an environmental justice perspective, I don't think it's wise to foist our problems on other communities. According to the Wall Street Journal, Norlite burned 2 million pounds of toxic firefighting foam in 2018 and 2019. It came to Cohoes from 25 different states. It came from 60 different military sites, and then some private companies and some state agencies. Even the Trump Environmental Protection Agency has concerns about burning toxic firefighter foam. I read an EPA technical brief from August 2019, and it said, quote, PFAS compounds are difficult to break down due to fluorine's electronegativity and the chemical stability of fluorinated compounds. Incomplete destruction of PFAS compounds can result in the formation of small PFAS products or products of incomplete combustion, which may not have been researched and thus could be a potential chemical of concern. And Dr. David Bond will address that in his testing. So Norlite stopped burning the toxic firefighter foam because they needed to upgrade their air pollution controls with a new scrubber system. I was surprised to learn that prior to this, Norlite was discharging 100,000 gallons of treated water every day from these scrubbers into the Mohawk River. So we learned about the previous burning in February, and then we learned that Norlite was shut down for a few months, so we had a little bit of time to breathe. The good news is that all three levels of government then swung into action. The new mayor of Cohoes, Bill Keeler, along with the Cohoes Common Council, adopted a one-year moratorium on burning toxic firefighter foam in Cohoes. And I really want to thank Mayor Keeler for his very strong leadership on this issue. At the county level, the Albany County Legislature is working on a new County Level Clean Air Act. It's called Local Law B. You can remember it. B is for burning. That Clean Air Act would prohibit the burning of toxic firefighter foam at Norlite. It would also prohibit tire burning at LaFarge and Queeman's and a few other waste materials. I want to thank the sponsors of the bill, County Legislators Bill Reinhart, Matt Miller, Joanne Cunningham, Vicki Plotsky, and others, and urge all Albany County legislators to please sign on as co-sponsors on the county bill. And then some terrific news. Assemblymember John McDonald and State Senator Neil Breslin moved heaven and earth to pass a bill in the New York State Legislature 2 weeks ago that would permanently ban the burning of toxic firefighter foam at Norlite. And something remarkable happened. It passed unanimously in both houses of the legislature. But we don't know if Governor Cuomo will sign or veto the bill. So please write down these bill numbers, Senate Bill 7880 and Assembly Bill 9952. And please call or write Governor Cuomo and urge him to sign this bill into law. It really should not be that hard.
Judith, this seems like a fantastic place for us to acknowledge who else is on the phone. Is that okay for us to do? So sure. First of all, I just want to mention that we are, I'm glad that we're joined tonight by Assemblyman John McDonald. We just mentioned your bill, Assemblyman, so thank you for the work that you've done. I noticed that you're here. And we also have Mayor Bill Keeler on the line. Mayor, are you here with us? Can I introduce you?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes. So let me introduce you to Mayor Keeler. Mayor Keeler is a native Cohosier and spent a 32-year career in law enforcement, starting with the Cohoes Police. He then joined the New York State Police, where he rose to the rank of Major and commanded Troop G, which includes the Capital Region. Mayor Keeler retired from law enforcement in January of 2017, and he became the Spindle City's 40th mayor when he took office in January of 2020. The mayor has been working to address issues surrounding Norlite, as Judith just mentioned, since mid-February, and he led the effort to enact Local Law 4 that imposes a one-year moratorium on the incineration of AFFF in Cohoes. And I want to invite the mayor to share with us some remarks this evening. Mayor Keeler?
Hi, thank you. Like you said, I just took office in January, and prior to the AFFF issue, I had recognized that the Saratoga sites was an environmental justice issue because it's literally, there are 70 families that are in the shadows of the Norlite smokestacks. So back in January, I invited Congressman Tonko to the office, and we had discussed how it was an industrial area. It really wasn't a great place for families. And we were talking about ways to relocate those folks out of that area, but, you know, find other places for them in Cohoes. And then about a month later, in mid-February, Judith brought to our attention that Norlite had been awarded the contract to incinerate AFFF, the firefighting foam containing these PFAS chemicals. So we immediately sent letters to Governor Cuomo, to the entire U.S. congressional delegation. I think at that time, if I didn't send a letter, I immediately contacted John McDonald, our assemblyman, to, you know, ask for information on the DOD contract, look for technical information regarding incineration of AFFF, because as Judith pointed out, the EPA's own technical brief suggested that the incineration of AFFF might not be effective in breaking the PFAS down. So we met with DEC in probably the third week of February, and they said that the AFFF was not regulated and that Norlite had burned, incinerated the firefighting foam back in 2019. So we met with the folks from Norlite who confirmed that, yes, they had a contract with DOD to incinerate AFFF, and furthermore, they advised that they had actually incinerated the firefighting foam as far back as 2018, in addition to 2019. So we're back and forth with DEC, probably in early March. They provided a list indicating that 2.5 million gallons of the firefighting foam had shipped from 25 states to Norlight to Hose, and that most of it, as it turns out, had been incinerated. So we subsequently had additional meetings with DEC, in the Department of Health back in March, and our asks of them were, we're looking for an administrative ban. We're looking for human and environmental testing to show us, you know, what that the burns in 2018 and 2019, what effects they may have had on the soil, on the salt kill watershed, on the people in the area. And the third ask was, we're looking for help, relocating Saratoga Sites residents. So in April, Cohoes passed a local law putting a one-year moratorium on incinerating AFFF in the city. And by May, we had actually gotten a report that 58,000 gallons, this is after the law had passed, that 58,000 gallons of the AFFF firefighting foam was en route to Norlight Cohoes for, presumably for incineration. So again, calls to the congressional delegation, calls to DEC, the governor's office, Assemblyman McDonald, Senator Breslin. And subsequently, Senator Breslin and Assemblyman McDonald were able to get the bill passed in the Senate and the Assembly that would prohibit the incineration in New York State if the governor signs it. Norlight has since told us that they canceled the contracts with DOD, and DEC has announced an administrative ban on the incineration of the firefighting foam. So that's pretty much where we are and what we did with the information. But again, thanks to Judith for initially making us aware of it back in February, for Assemblyman McDonald and Senator Breslin, who have been in this fight with us, from day one.
Mayor, thank you so much for providing us with that context, and I hope you'll stay on the line for some questions. Sure. Reminder for, thank you. I want to introduce you next to Joe Ritchie. Joseph Ritchie is a student at Syracuse University. He is a resident of Saratoga Sites, which is right near the Norlight facility. He's a lifelong community advocate and has been following the issues surrounding Norlight for quite some time. Joe, I'm gonna ask you to speak.
Yes, thank you for everyone for having us and everyone that's sponsoring and all the people who are willing to spend their summer afternoon on a environmental advocacy call. It's really awesome. So I'll just give you some background on who I am and what I've been doing in the past few months. So I'm a lifelong resident of Saratoga Sites. I've lived here for 19 years. I'm going to be 20 next month, so my whole life. And I've always cared about the environment ever since I was younger. I would visit my grandfather's in the Adirondacks, enjoy the lakes, and really appreciate what nature is. I found out in February, just like everybody else, that Norlight was burning these harmful chemicals. And I said, this isn't right, because we've learned a couple of years ago in Hoosick Falls what happened there with contamination there, and it wasn't great. And Norlight has been an issue for my community for a very long time, since the 50s. And they've been fined. They've been, told they've been doing a bad job, but they really haven't been punished to the degree that would seem fit. They're a multi-million dollar company. And they can afford $300,000 fines, $200,000 fines. And the residents of Saratoga Sites have not seen a single dime of those fines. I know there's legality along where those fines should go, but regardless, I'm trying to be here as an advocate for all of Saratoga Sites residents, because everyone has a lot going on, especially right now through coronavirus. People are working, trying to put bread on the table, and that's why I'm here, so I can get the information out and just spread it along people that live here. And not necessarily just Saratoga Sites, but there's also private homeowners across the street. that I've been in contact with. There's also another apartment complex. There's a Speedway. There's where people eat Hot Dog Charlies. They eat. And people are raising their children here. And it's not fundamentally right for this company to be here. They should never have been here. We can, you know, discuss why they were here a long time ago. That's a different issue. But the residents of Saratoga sites have been facing environmental injustices for decades. This isn't a new issue. Children can't enjoy the snow in the wintertime because it has a black soot on it. You can literally see it after a week. After it snows, the snow becomes black. Our cars, if we wash them, the cars become black. If we go out and get the mail while they were burning consistently, you start gagging. It smells like all your worst chemicals being burnt into a bin. More action needs to be done. I'm very grateful for all the work that's been done in the Assembly and State Senate. And I'm hoping that, you know, the governor signs on to this bill. But ultimately, we need to work forward to the ultimate goal of hopefully ceasing operation in Norlite. That's my life's goal right now, is to focus head on and what we can do to shut this thing down, because we have to make the bold steps in order to be a bold leading community. You know, Cohoes signed on to a deal that they said they want to be a green community. They want to be with the state's agenda for a green city. Let's be bold and let's make those decisions together thoughtfully and in a smart way, not doing things out of passion, but doing things out of science. The science is really important. And also that there's people that live 500 yards. If I look out my window, there's Norlite. So, you know, that's pretty much what I have to say for right now.
Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. I'm going to introduce you next to Dr. David Carpenter. David O. Carpenter is a public health physician who previously served as the director of the Wadsworth Laboratories of the New York State Department of Health, and then as dean of the School of Public Health at the University at Albany. His research interests are environmental causes of human disease. Dr. Carpenter, I'd like to turn the microphone over to you.
Thank you very much, Corinne. Let me tell you a little more about these chemicals. These are called perfluorinated chemicals because they're primarily carbon atoms that have fluorines attached to them. As Judith mentioned, the ones that we've known for the longest time are PFOA, that's at Hoosick Falls, PFOS, that's at a number of military bases, and it's a major component of this firefighting foam. Now, those two compounds have been studied for a long time, and they've been voluntarily withdrawn by most manufacturers in this country. But what the manufacturers have done in the meantime is change the length of the carbon chains or add some component into that structure so that it does more or less the same thing. It's water repellent, it's stain resistant, but nobody has studied whether or not it's dangerous. Now, when you burn firefighting foam that contains chemicals that suppress fire, nobody knows what is the product. And as Judith mentioned, there are all of these products of incomplete combustion. Now, incinerators have long been used for getting rid of hazardous waste. And that's a real problem in our society. We generate this hazardous waste, and then what do you do about it? Because you have to get rid of it somehow. So incineration, if it's done properly, can work for some hazardous chemicals. The ones that I've worked with most are PCBs and dioxins. They are rather like these perfluorinated compounds, but they contain chlorines, not fluorines. And then there's another class of nasty chemicals that are called the brominated flame retardants. And these are chemicals sprayed on our upholstery, our curtains, and so forth, that reduce the rapidity with which the fabric will burn. All of these compounds have a whole series of human health effects. But the problem is the fluorine carbon bound is much stronger than the chlorine carbon or the bromine carbon. These are all halogen items. The reason that these are called forever chemicals is that in the environment and in our bodies, they stay for a long time. If you are exposed to these compounds today, you'll have half of them in your body at least 7 years from now. And then another half will get rid of in the next 7 years. Okay, so what are the health effects? Well, as people that have been involved in the Hoosick Falls situation know, these chemicals cause cancer. And they specifically cause at least three kinds of cancer: testicular cancer, kidney cancer, and bladder cancer. We know a lot about that because DuPont had a factory in West Virginia that contaminated bodies of water there. And as part of the settlement, there were major studies of the diseases those people have. All right, but that was when the chemicals were sort of dumped into the water. What's happening at Norlite? They're burning them. The chemicals that are not completely combusted are going into the air. And people are going to breathe them. And also, when they come out of the air, they're going to deposit in the ground, contaminating the soil. They're going to get in the water, contaminating the water and the fish. Now, I have a project funded by the National Institutes of Health where we're looking at these compounds in Alaskan natives on St. Lawrence Island, Alaska, off the coast of Nome. Obviously, no industry up there. Those people have as high a level of these compounds as most people in the lower 48. And that is all because of air transport of these compounds. So nobody should minimize the importance of inhalation, especially if you live around a plant that's burning these chemicals and probably not doing it efficiently. Now, one big issue is the temperature in the plant and the length of time that these chemicals are exposed. From all that I know, to get complete combustion of these compounds, you should have a temperature of 1400 degrees centigrade. From everything I've been told, the maximum temperature at Norlite is something like 800 degrees centigrade. So right there, you can be pretty sure there's not going to be complete combustion. All right, go back to the health effects. Cancer. One of the big concerns that I think is particularly timely is that these compounds as a class suppress our immune system. And there have been studies from Denmark that show that children that are immunized do not respond to the immunization as effectively if they're exposed to perfluorinated compounds. In this day and age of COVID-19, if and when we get a vaccine, if you are inhaling these compounds, if they're in the soil in your yard and they get in your vegetables or in your fish, the last thing you want is to not have that vaccine be as efficient as it would be if you were not exposed. These compounds cause liver disease, they cause kidney disease, they cause respiratory disease. And of course, the issue is that, as Judith said, there's some 5,000 of these different chemicals. And so there've been a few studies of individual chemicals. Not all of the individual chemicals do exactly the same thing. So we have this gamish of toxic chemicals, many of which have never been even studied scientifically. And there is zero reason to think that any of these are without hazardous effects to people. So what is the solution? Well, the first solution is don't let people be exposed to these chemicals. Whether it's by breathing the air, having their food contaminated, their fish contaminated, their soil contaminated. And then, of course, we need more research, but we definitely need regulation. The precautionary principle says we will not allow things to be put upon us when there's a reasonable degree of question about whether they're toxic, even if we don't have all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. These are toxic chemicals. They don't burn very well. We should not be incinerating them in Cohoes or anywhere else. How we get rid of them, that's another question. But this is definitely not a safe way to get rid of them and poses significant hazard to human health. Thank you very much.
Dr. Carpenter, thank you so much for your remarks. I'm sure that there will be questions for you when we turn to the question and answer period of this program.
Thanks.
I'd like to next invite Dr. David Bond to join us. Dr. Bond teaches environmental studies at Bennington College, where he directs the Understanding PFOA project that tries to link up with scientific resources of colleges with community concerns around PFAS, PFAS contamination. In March, David and his team took water and soil samples from around Norlite and analyzed them for PFAS compounds. He will discuss the results of that research tonight, and then I'm sure we'll have some questions for him. Dr. Bond.
Thank you. Thank you, Corinne, and thanks to all of those who've worked so hard to bring us together for this really urgent conversation. And thanks to everybody who's joined us as we learn new ways to pursue environmental justice during a pandemic. And it's we can't all be in the same place, but it's really great to see everyone gathered here together. So my name is David Bond, and I'm the Associate Director of the Center for the Advancement of Public Action at Bennington College. After PFOA was detected in alarming levels in the drinking water of Hoosick Falls, and hundreds of residential wells in New York and Vermont, I started the Understanding PFOA project at Bennington College. Since 2016, and with the support of the National Science Foundation, we have been working to make the growing scientific concerns about the dangers of PFAS contamination, scientific concerns that are often written in a highly technical language and published behind paywalls, we've worked to make that science more accessible to impacted communities. There's often a disjuncture between the growing scientific concern about the real danger that this class of chemical poses and the places that are asking urgent questions about these chemicals. And so we've tried to work to bridge the science and the places impacted by these chemicals. Each year, we also take a few concerns from residents and turn them into an exploratory research project. Where we try to produce independent data for communities trying to navigate the discovery of these chemicals in their community. Looking at everything from, is there any PFOA in maple sap? There was. To sort of a local community's knowledge of its own health in relation to PFAS contamination. When everything at Norlite came to light, we decided to build a research project around the questions that many residents were starting to ask. What's coming out of the stacks when PFAS chemicals are being burned? A little bit of background just to sort of go through how we got to this study we did this past March. As others have summarized, for at least 2 years, Norlite attempted to burn a staggeringly large amount of the toxic firefighting foam AFFF. In 2018 and 2019, hundreds of tanker cars of AFFF arrived in the Capital District, coming in from as far away as North Dakota, Texas, and West Virginia. What is AFFF? Perfluorinated compounds like PFOA and PFOS, the same chemicals that contaminated Hoosick Falls and Newburgh. These chemicals are the main ingredients of AFFF. The engineered properties of perfluorinated compounds makes them nearly indestructible. And once released, these toxins never break down. Literally, they never break down, leading many environmental advocates to refer to them as forever chemicals. Once released, they never break down, but they don't always stay put. They're highly mobile and they bioaccumulate. These sort of properties, the indestructibility of these toxins, their mobility in the environment, and the way that they bioaccumulate, make them a real challenge, a new kind of challenge for environmental regulation and environmental justice. These same properties also, their sheer durability and ability to withstand degradation, have made PFAS compounds extraordinarily effective at putting out industrial or jet fuel fires, which is how they got brought into AFFF. And AFFF now is a firefighting foam that uses the chemical properties of perfluorinated compounds to fight industrial and jet fuel fires. Really tricky fires to fight. So, as others have sort of indicated, if you think burning a toxin engineered to suppress fire is completely ludicrous, you're not alone. It also flies in the face of the best science and the best regulatory expertise that we have. Although incineration breaks down many hazardous chemicals, there is no evidence that it eradicates PFAS compounds. Again, there is no evidence that incineration breaks these toxins down. Here's how the EPA put it in 2019, quote, "The effectiveness of incineration to destroy PFAS compounds is not well understood." The EPA report continued, "Our grasp of the, quote, thermal destructibility, the ability of fire to destroy, our grasp of the thermal destructibility of PFAS is sparse, thinly extrapolated, and inoperable." This past April, only a few months ago, in another EPA presentation summarized a new concern. Burning AFFF may not only not destroy these compounds, it may in fact produce new toxic perfluorinated chemicals that we don't even know how to detect yet. The kiln may in fact act like a witch's cauldron, conjuring up new chemical afflictions. While the proper way to dispose of these forever chemicals, the chemicals in AFFF, is debated, the dangers they pose to human health is not. There is no debate about the risk these chemicals pose to human health. Exposure to trace amounts of PFAS chemicals in AFFF is strongly linked to a host of cancers, developmental disorders, immune dysfunction, and infertility. Several states, including New York, have banned the use of AFFF over these health concerns around the PFAS compounds in AFFF. That's why they banned AFFF, for these very things. Despite striking knowledge gaps and clear public health risks, Norlite poured over 2 million pounds of AFFF into its furnaces in 2018 and 2019. A fundamental question hangs over this operation. If incineration is an unproven means of destroying these toxins, what happened? What happened when they tried to burn 2 million pounds of AFFF? Is Norlite solving this problem by incinerating it, or simply redistributing these toxins into poor and working class neighborhoods in Cohoes, or perhaps even the Capital District? That scale of contamination is not out of line with thinking about the plants that emit PFAS compounds. Indeed, there's new evidence coming out of how far these PFAS compounds go when they're emitted from a plant and elevate levels in soil and water. So for example, the ChemFab plant in Merrimack, New Hampshire, which emitted perfluorinated compounds for a little over a decade, contaminated groundwater in New Hampshire for over 100 square miles, bringing the groundwater over the health levels for drinking water, over 100 square miles area. The three plastics plant that dot our region, my region, Hoosick Falls, Petersburg, and Bennington, together emitted PFOA that we've detected in an area of about 175 square miles that we see elevated levels in the soil downwind of those plastics plants. There was a new report that just came out a few weeks ago about the Chemours plants, one of the main producers of these chemicals in West Virginia, that found emissions from this plant. Again, a stack that's supposed to burn these things, that emissions from that stack polluted water and soil 25 miles downwind of that plant. So emissions are a growing concern as a source of how these chemicals get into our soil and water and our environment. So given the questions around this, that are neither unreasonable nor impossible to answer, is what's coming out of the stacks when Norlite burns AFFF. The fact that it's taken 2 years for this question to come to public light demonstrates just how poorly the disposal of these forever chemicals is being managed today. Given the significance of these questions, Bennington College designed an exploratory research project to look at PFAS levels around Norlite. In early March, a team of professors and students took 3 soil and 4 surface water samples from relatively undisturbed sites in the neighborhoods around the incinerator, including the Saratoga Sites public housing complex that literally sits in the shadows of Norlite. We had a commercial lab analyze these samples for a wide array of perfluorinated compounds. The full results of our research can be found on our website, www.bennington.edu/PFOA. What we found is concerning. The soil and surface waters around Norlite are laced with PFAS compounds commonly found in AFFF. While our research is preliminary, the pattern of contamination that we identified mirrors the composition of AFFF. 9 of the 10 PFAS compounds detected in a pond adjacent Norlite are key ingredients or breakdown products of AFFF. A few hours after we shared our preliminary findings, New York State DEC rejected them out of hand and refused our calls for more research, stating, quote, "There is no basis to conduct additional sampling at Norlite." This is a striking assertion. Under the watchful eye of a full-time on-site DEC monitor, Norlite burned at least 2 million pounds of AFFF over the past 2 years with no scientific monitoring to ensure that incineration was actually destroying these toxic chemicals. Is DEC afraid of what it might now find if it looks around Norlite? As we said when we first released our data, DEC needs to do its own testing and share the results with the public. Our study is the first in the nation to analyze PFAS levels in soil and water outside a facility burning AFFF. That in itself is a shocking finding. The burning has gone on for some time now. Nobody has looked to see what happens after you burn AFFF. This is a huge knowledge gap with massive public health implications. And ground zero for this question happens to be in Cohoes, New York. It's the first study to look at this. However, previous environmental research has examined PFAS contamination in groundwater where AFFF has been used extensively, like Air Force bases or training centers or firefighters. The patterns of PFAS contamination we found around Norlite resembles patterns of contamination detected at these sites of extensive AFFF use. This distinct pattern of PFAS contamination differs from the more general pattern of PFAS contamination we found elsewhere in our region. We've taken hundreds of samples from groundwater, surface water, and soils all across New York and Vermont. In almost every sample we take, we see the same pattern of PFAS contamination. And in almost every sample, PFOA is the most prevalent compound. It's the one we see the most in the highest levels. Around Norlite, PFOA falls to the wayside as other compounds become the most prevalent. Compounds like PFBS, PFBEA, PFHXA, and PFBA. Those are the compounds that were the most prevalent around Norlite. While not yet household names, these compounds are key ingredients in AFFF and likely share the same toxicological profile as PFOA. This distinct pattern of PFAS contamination around Norlite declines with distance from the incinerator. Far from destroying AFFF, the Norlite facility appears to be raining down a witch's brew of toxic perfluorinated compounds onto the poor and working class neighborhoods of Cohoes, New York. While we were collecting samples, we ran into a number of residents at the Saratoga sites, many of whom complained to us of being tear gassed in their home. AFFF has a unique chemical fingerprint. That chemical fingerprint can now be lifted off the landscapes and neighborhoods around Norlite and perhaps even across the entire Capital District. A more comprehensive investigation is urgently needed to determine the full extent of PFAS contamination around Norlite. And until there's scientific consensus about how to safely dispose of these toxic chemicals, all incineration of PFAS compounds must be banned. Environmental justice and public health depends on it. Thank you.
Dr. Bond, thank you so much for those remarks. I want to start out because we do have Assemblyman John McDonald in our town hall meeting tonight as a listener. But Judith Enck mentioned the bill that was passed unanimously by the Assembly and the Senate and awaiting the governor's signature. And I'd like to ask Assemblymember McDonald to say a few words about what he knows about where Governor Cuomo stands on this issue and the outlook for whether this bill will become law. Assemblymember McDonald?
Thank you, Corrine, and I'll be brief. As you know, the governor has a pretty good track record when it comes to the environment. And last week, Senator Breslin and myself had a rather lengthy conversation with the Deputy Secretary for Environment, as well as the governor's chief counsel. The good news is on the structure of the bill is straightforward. Many people don't realize we actually amended the bill at the last moment to move from a statewide bill to a local bill, because we were only considering local bills when we were in session a couple of weeks ago. That's why we're at this point right now. We were able to move quickly on that aspect, and I thank Judith for her counsel and advice during that process. They are going to review the bill. They did mention that their largest concern, which Dr. Carpenter actually referenced a little bit too, and it should be a concern of all of us, is what is the best long-term way to address its waste stream, which is a legitimate issue. We don't want it accumulating in our landfills and leaking out in society. That being said, that's something we all can collectively work together on, but same token, we want the governor to sign the bill. And the good news is Bill and his team at Cohoes, the council, took the correct step first to give us a little bit of a window to breathe. So we've got until next April, but I'm hopeful over the next 2 or 3 weeks that we start to get some motion. But right now, they have not indicated they would veto the bill by any stretch of the imagination, but they did not indicate that they are going to pass the bill yet. So I think they're noodling it, and I think, as was referenced earlier, if some voices could be raised, it'd be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Assemblymember. I want to encourage people to follow the Sanctuary for Independent Media on social media. You'll see that we'll have some action alerts. We'll have some information about how you can get involved at the end of this town hall, ways to contact the governor, ways to take action. Just keep paying attention like you are for ways to get involved. The next question coming in is for the scientists. You know, we heard from Joe, and we've heard from a number of people commenting on Facebook and in the chat box that we don't want these chemicals being burned near our homes. We don't want these chemicals being burned near our water sources. But what do you do? What is the alternative to handling AFFF, AFFF, what are the alternatives to PFAS and the other chemical compounds? What are some options for handling these chemicals that would be safer? What do we do with them? We're producing them. What do we now do with them? Dr. Carpenter, Dr. Bond, do either one of you want to start us out with that question?
Well, I'll start. We make a number of very dangerous chemicals, and then when we find out how dangerous they are, we don't know what to do with them. Take PCBs in the Hudson River. Well, they could be burned, and the only problem is that there's so much contaminated sediment that it's very expensive. And if you burn soil, you burn all organic material. So what happens with them? Well, they get shipped to some other state, usually Texas, and they get put in a secure landfill. Now, that's a good temporary solution, but it's not a permanent solution, because when those chemicals are put in a landfill and it's contained and covered, they will not degrade at all forever. And 100 years from now, someone will forget that there's a landfill there and they'll dig a foundation for a home. But I think that in the short term, for this firefighting form, that is probably the best alternative. To put it in a secure landfill with clear prohibition of people getting digging down in it and just getting it away from people. But it's not optimal. We really need to be able to destroy these compounds, but we don't have cost-effective ways of doing that.
Corrine, if I could just add, Yes. We know the worst thing to do is burn it. So it's kind of puzzling that we've gone right to the worst thing. So we need a state law, a county law, a local law, all three on the books saying you can't burn this material. 75% of this is generated from Department of Defense. The Pentagon has a very large budget. When I was the EPA regional administrator, I would often do meetings at the Pentagon. They never ended well, but I was amazed at the opulence of the Pentagon. It did not look anything like the EPA office. And it reminded me that they have resources. They have an R&D budget. And I want to share an example involving the Bluegrass Army Depot in Kentucky. A number of years ago, now remember, the military has a lot of difficult waste streams that they have to dispose of. A number of years ago, they had chemical weapons on rockets that they needed to dispose of. And they tried to bring it to the Bluegrass Army Depot in Kentucky to burn at an incinerator. The local residents organized, just like what's happening in Cahos. They got some allies, a guy named Mitch McConnell, and others helped them block this. And instead, Department of Defense put a lot of money into research and development, and they identified a supercritical water oxidation unit, which destroys the chemical weapons without incinerating it and putting the emissions into the atmosphere. The bad news is it took $1 billion and 15 years for them to figure it out. But the Department of Defense R&D budget is significantly larger than the New York State DEC budget and the City of Cahos budget. And I think what our state regulators need to do is work with Department of Defense on better disposal options that do not include incineration.
Thank you so much for all of that information. I want to thank our panelists. I want to thank the Sanctuary for Independent Media for hosting this town hall, Lights Out Norlight, and the environmental groups that joined in this evening. Thank you. Thank you all, and have a wonderful evening.
You've been listening to a special holiday edition of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, which airs weekdays at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. Visit mediasanctuary.org for more information. Until next time.